Welcome to the European CME Forum podcast. European CME Forum is a not-for-profit organization that promotes multi-channel discussion on matters relating to European and global CME CPD. My name is Eugene Pozniak. I'm the program director of European CME Forum. In today's episode, Monica Ghidinelli from the AO Foundation chats with Good CME Practice Group members Celeste Kalanko of Libro Miami and Gabor Puhrmann of Elevate CME. The Good CME Practice Group, or GCMEP, is a membership organization for CME providers based in Europe. The focus of today's episode is incorporating the patient voice in CME.
Hi everyone, welcome to this webinar. I am Monica Ghidinelli. I work for the AO Foundation and I'm the current chair of the Good CME Practice Group. With me today, I have Celeste Kalanko from Libro Miami and Gabor Puhrmann from Elevate CME to talk about incorporating patient voice in CME. This topic is becoming more relevant recently, has been discussed at AMI conferences, at the 15th European CME Forum, and is also going to be in the scope of the special collection 2023 for the Journal of CME that will open quite soon. So the Good CME Practice Group is a group of providers. And as a provider, is it clear to us that medical education must be developed with the patient as is in mind? So we normally start with the patient problem, identify gaps, and then develop education to fill those gaps. But how often do we really include patient voice in continuing medical education? So I have to say probably little, and in the AO Foundation where I work, we are talking about it quite often, like we should include them. But however, the direct patient involvement is really minimal. We started to talk with patient associations like AOPATI and have really few projects in which patients are involved. But of course, the first thing as for me, and this is why we are here today with Celeste and Gabor to learn from them, their experience on how they did that. And the first thing is really, when do you incorporate the patient voice? When is it appropriate? So I would like to start with you, Celeste. Can you tell us when you incorporate this?
Yeah, so I think, thank you, Monica, and pleasure to be here with you and Gabor today. When is the patient voice, when do we want to incorporate it? I think, you know, as in most cases, it's on a case-by-case or an activity or to-activity basis. For example, you have to look at your learning objectives and what are you trying to accomplish. If it was a program, let's say, that was specifically focused on high science, mechanism of action, detailed research, I don't know if that would necessarily be the place that you would want to start in looking at, you know, a patient voice type of situation. But there are so many different opportunities when we are looking to incorporate the patient's needs, because what we find oftentimes is that clinicians, when they have been made aware of, you know, of the patient's needs, or in this case, their voice, or how they're feeling, they're sometimes quite surprised, and not that they don't want to change in their treatment patterns, but that they're just not really aware of things that are happening. So I think it's important that we consider, whenever we're doing our initial planning for an activity and we are looking at what are the gaps that we're trying to fill, what are the needs, what are our learning objectives, and is there any relevance at all? And I would say that in many, many cases, we kind of forget about this until the last minute. But I think it's much more coming to people's awareness, and we can incorporate it in many, many more programs than we have to date.
Okay, so it is quite clear not every single piece of education requires that or is will benefit from including the patient right. voice. But if you include the patient voice, I mean, which are the benefits? Why should we incorporate those? I mean, Celeste, can you just briefly
expand on that a little? Sure. So I think, you know, there are definitely lots of benefits from including the patient voice. So, you know, doctors are moving from learning on or about the patient. Sometimes they're learning with patients, you know. The recognition that while, you know, one size does not fit all in treatment cases, in many cases, you know, recognizing that patients are often their own experts within their own conditions. They've been living with this day to day. They're not the 30-minute appointment or the 15-minute appointment that they have with their healthcare professional. They oftentimes help to identify gaps in the knowledge and treatment areas where we just kind of assume dealing with only professionals that we may have it all. But a lot of times patients can definitely reveal additional gaps and knowledge gaps. You know, sometimes we've discovered that it's an aha moment for a lot of physicians and healthcare professionals because they are, you know, sometimes they think they know what the problem is, but maybe, you know, it's something that they've missed through no fault of their own. You know, oftentimes, especially if you're working with patient advocacy groups, there's a lot of data that can be collected from the patient voice, you know, and utilize this for future programs or, you know, programs. And I know that Gabor has some great insights on this. And, you know, greater sensitivity towards the patient, having a much more of an emotional connection between patients and their physicians or healthcare professionals. But finally, the other thing that we found out with some of the programs that we've talked to, a lot of times patients who are suffering or even caregivers in some case who are suffering, they want to feel that there's some value to what they've had to put themselves through. And they worry about this is their opportunity to give back to the community, whether it is the community at large or it's just their own, you know, their own group of patients like themselves. And this gives them this feeling that their condition has not been in vain, that they have been able to give back. So those are some of the reasons why, you know, we feel that it's really important to try to include patients in education.
So thank you, Celeste. Now we talked about when and why, but now let's go to the real example. So I want to turn to you, Gabor, to give us how did you really incorporate patients in education and what was the final output of this?
Yeah, thank you. It's my pleasure to be here on this webinar. We have a number of cases where we wanted to explore what is the holistic impact of the condition and the treatment on the patient and the family. So we have reached out in case of a rare pediatric condition to patient organizations across a number of countries. We have interviewed parents who have a child suffering from that rare condition. And by walking through their treatment experience, you know, what were the problems before they got diagnosed, how long it took to get diagnosed, what were the treatment options, and what were the challenges during the treatment, we could picture it in a patient journey map. And we also have cases where patient organizations have already a patient journey map, and some of the insights, how the practical, emotional, and medical challenges during the patient treatment experience is coming up is really new to physicians because usually they focus just on the clinical aspect. In our case, physicians usually did not proactively explain to patients that child can develop needle phobia. So and those children are receiving every day an injection for 15 years. If parents were aware of how to prevent needle phobia, how to manage, that would have reduced their pain quite a lot. In some cases, it took 2-3 years until the families were informed that, that there is a patient advocacy group available in their country who can provide support. So that was another insight that it is worthwhile to explain to physicians that they should proactively invite patients to join the advocacy groups because they can get really great benefits from that. And also just to confirm what Celeste mentioned, throughout the interviews with families and parents, they were super engaged and super inspirational if they can support families who will come, you know, with a similar situation in the future. Also, we figured out that if you have a child with a rare condition in the family, other siblings can be impacted. And one of the mother explained, I wish I knew how should I handle my completely healthy child, because it turned out that, that because of the overprotection of the older brother to the younger daughter, he developed some psychological condition. And that's another aspect that physicians should be aware of. They should proactively ask parents, do you have another sibling? If you do, this is what you should do to prevent so that the whole family is treated. So you see, those are examples that were really eye-openers, how to inform physicians that apart from giving the right medication, instructing how to give the injection and dose, what other aspects they should include in the discussions. And completely agree with Celeste, this is not necessarily needed in every single program, but once to that could be a dedicated chapter, how to treat a rare condition holistically and what are the different aspects that either physicians or nurses should incorporate when they are briefing the families, the patients, and how to manage the whole family.
Gabor, maybe I want to you to tell me, because you mentioned that you contacted different patients associations. How ready were they to answer to your request? Because I know that, for example, for some associations, they are ready. They have also education on how to participate in clinical trials. But what about specific medical education? Were they ready for that?
Usually they were open. So as soon as we could explain that we are developing an education program that will address how to treat conditions in the future across different countries, usually they were really open once they understood. Of course, they had to know what is the background, who is the pharmaceutical company behind, what will be the end outcome. Also, they were really happy to see what was the result of the research. And sometimes we also have cases that we could publish the patient journey map that we produced together. And some patient organization, they were part of the authors. And as soon as it is published in a public domain, then it's also much easier for them and for us to refer to that. And once we could convince the patient organization about the, what is the task and what are the benefits, then they could announce our research within their members and they could volunteer. So they could send us a note, complete a survey that they are ready to take part in the interview. They shared, of course, their contact details, everything GDPR approved, and then we set up the interviews. And so the altruistic attitude, both by organizations and by participants, was super positive.
Okay, that's great. Thank you. Now, Celeste, do you have also an example of how you incorporated the patient voice in your?
Sure. Sure. So, you know, very similar to Gabor, we worked with a patient advocacy group. And in our specific case, more recent case was in the area of hepatitis. And we worked with a patient advocacy group and we made them part of our faculty. So the head of the president of the organization, who was also a patient themselves, was part of our faculty, and we included them with three other, we had a faculty of four on our program, three other healthcare professionals that were part of this. And in this particular case, you know, they worked with us, first of all, in developing our initial needs assessment and looking at our gaps. And then from there, what we did was, you know, we created content for the program. They were content reviewers and had their input in. And it was very interesting because a lot of times, even our own faculty of healthcare professionals would, you know, it would make them pause to think a little bit about their decisions. And I have to say, it was a really interesting process to watch the collaboration between these different groups. And, you know, but it was extremely positive in many ways. But as I said, there were many of these kind of aha moments. And from there, we created materials for the education purposes around the actual clinical aspects. But one of the things that arose was that, you know, healthcare professionals were still having some difficulties having conversations with their patients. And so as kind of an additional thing, we created some mini animations that that helped to coach healthcare professionals on how to have conversations with their patients based on the things that we learned through going through this process. And I will tell you, they were extremely well received and highly viewed. Because again, I think that sometimes healthcare professionals, they're not necessarily educated on these pieces, but the original plan when we were putting this together did not have that piece in it. But by working together with the healthcare professional faculty and as well as the patient advocate, we had a very, very complete and well-rounded program from there. So it was really, you know, it was an interesting experience for us to go through, and something that I would recommend people work on. I would say give yourself a little extra time, because it's not normal. It's not usual for these types of groups to necessarily over here in Europe be on the same kind of faculty together. So it takes a little time to get people together, to get people talking. But once they gel, it's really, really rewarding. And, you know, we had a really positive experience with it.
So here you talk. So in one case, we had Gabor that incorporated, so interviewed the patients, the family. So there is how, and then build the patient journey map. Instead, you included them as faculty. So mm-hmm. This is another way on how to do that. Mm-hmm. And of course, you mentioned again that the person was in advocacy, patient advocacy group, but was mm-hmm. also a patient. Mm-hmm. And in that case, there was a question already submitted before this webinar about how, so the patient, of course, has his own opinion of the disease and the they have their own story. And how do you integrate that and how you take that into consideration when you talk about, okay, patients in general? How is that, how you incorporate the global vision of the patients in education?
Well, and then I'll let Gabor comment as well. I think that's one of the benefits of using a patient advocacy group, because they do have access to multiple patients and patient needs in that particular situation. In this particular case, the president and our faculty happened to be a patient themselves, but this organization had tremendous amount of data that they had collected from patients who are part of the organization. So they weren't, while they had their own ideas, they truly represented what was collected through a much larger group, which is something obviously we could not have done if we just had one or two patients that we were working with. But so that's why I think that, you know, that's where your patient advocacy group can help you allay the biases that might come from just one or two patients. Gabor?
Well, also we have examples. Of course, every family has a personal story. However, there are a couple of general patterns. and by highlighting the general patterns to physicians could and also providing tips. I'll give you an example. So in one family with this rare condition, they had to take their young daughter to hospital every 6 months. And it took the whole day. The older brother was scared because for him, going to hospital is scary. She might not come back home. She might stay there. She might die. So he was overly anxious. There was another family. They took both children out of school. Both children went to hospital. The health discipline could see there is nothing dramatic happening in the hospital. They went out for dinner. They went out to cinema. So actually the hospital visit was a positive emotional impact. And the brother was involved in preparing the injections. So you see, just how to handle the whole family situation could be one pattern. And of course, personally, it can vary a little bit, but that's something that physicians should address proactively. Another general pattern was in that condition that at the age of 8 and 9, children start self-injecting. So again, usually families reported that they were not instructed, they were not fully briefed by physicians when to start it, how to do it, because of course parents did all the injections, so they were not encouraged, they don't know how to do it, how to do this transition. And you see, that's another general question. Sooner or later, they will have to start self-inject. And very often the needle phobia disappeared when they started self-injecting. So actually there are additional benefits of kicking off, you know, the self-injection even sooner. So you see, those are the aspects that I would say general patterns. Of course, there are many personal stories. The healthcare system is completely different. For example, in the Netherlands, there is a 24-hour helpline that parents can ring anytime, 24/7. In the UK, on the contrary, they can only see a specialist every 6 months for 20 minutes. So those are the differences that is very difficult to handle in a European program. So those should usually left out, but how to work with patient advocacy groups, how to manage self-injection, how to manage the family aspect. Those are the items that we incorporated in the program to healthcare professionals. And from the feedback that we received from participants, some of those aspects were eye-openers for them because they were not aware of that, because they were always just focusing on the lab test, on the growth curves, on the charts, and also whether the injections were done on time. So we received really positive feedback on that.
Thank you very much, Gabor. So what I'm hearing also here that I want to point out from what you said is, like, of course, patients are different in different countries. So again, the target learner of your education should be taken into consideration. And the, of course, the patients of that country should be considered, because of course there are different healthcare systems and difference also cultural differences, for example.
Mm-hmm. One more thing I remembered were to mention, very often parents reported feeling of guilt because they thought they did something wrong. That's why the child has a condition. And also they were worried they have to inject their child sometimes at the age of 1 or 2 every single day. So there were parents who were even injecting themselves just to suffer the same pain, of course, without medication. So you see the extent of the impact of the condition is sometimes enormous.
Yeah, so exactly. It's really beneficial to have these patients' perspective included in the education, so the doctors have also the... They know about the condition and how it's impacted the whole family. Now, I would like to ask, we talked about different ways of how we can integrate patients, but we didn't talk about the planning. So when you do, for example, the needs assessment, so can we include them in the needs assessment when we really start to think about the program that we want to develop? And can some of you, how would you do that? Celeste?
Yeah. I mean, I think definitely, I think it starts when you sit down and you're planning your activity and you've decided, I highly recommend when you're doing your initial needs assessment, when you're doing your initial research, if it's at all possible, to reach out to a patient organization, a patient advocacy group, and have a conversation with them. I mean, most of them, quite frankly, are quite willing to talk to people. And a quick email or phone call, say, we'd like to have, 15 to 30 minutes of your time to ask you some questions around this is extremely valuable. Number one, it'll kind of tell you how much or what extent you want to include the patient voice within your program. And usually, and it helps you to build a relationship with them. And, in fact, that's kind of how we ended up using this program that I spoke about in a past previous organization. We had worked with them. And so, when we started brainstorming about this program, I just said, oh, yes, call them. They'll be very willing to help us. And they were. So you start to build up a relationship. You can help. They can help you, definitely from a planning perspective and from a needs assessment. So I highly encourage people to reach out to advocacy groups. And to your point, Monica, I think it's very, very much dependent too on, are you looking at something global based? Are you looking at something European based? Are you looking at something country based? And ask yourself those questions beforehand. And that's who you want to, reach out to. But we've always found, we've talked to patient, I just gave you the one example today because it was a very large program, but we have frequently talked to other patient advocacy groups and they want to help. They want to get involved. And they can be very, very helpful, especially in that needs assessment phase.
Great. Exactly. Just to reiterate, we also produced a program for diabetes. And of course, in diabetes, there are very structured patient organizations and very often they have their own research completed. So they just direct us to certain publications that they recently published about, what are the practical, emotional and clinical challenges. And some of that we could incorporate in the needs assessment. And as we drafted different modules for the CME program, some of them were actually highlighting what are those practical and emotional needs and how to address them by physicians.
And do you know if it's, do you have experience with collaborating also transcontinental? I mean, not only in Europe, but also within US and things like that.
I mean, I think it depends on the therapy area. And, speaking for someone who has worked both in CME and IME, both in the United States and now over in Europe over here for 10 years, I think everybody has, there are some similarities and challenges, but there are definitely probably more differences. Obviously, some of the basics, from a health concern aspect is going to be the same. But as Gabor was mentioning, his process with, the treatment plan and, working with the families and everything, that's going to be extremely specialized and localized. And, I feel that, I think, unfortunately, we've tried to generalize with one size fits all, but it doesn't really work that way. So I definitely think that it's much better to try to work with, countrywide if you can. And if not, certainly there's European based organizations that will be, and can often give you good direction. And a lot of times they're kind of an overarching group for many more smaller countrywide organizations. So that's a good opportunity to have an initial conversation with the European wide and then kind of figure out going forward from there. But I would say true global with the patient is I believe a bit unrealistic.
I would just echo that usually the patient organizations in the US, they are much more structured, better developed, they have their own data, So I would rather go designing one program for North America and designing a different program in Europe and contacting patient organizations accordingly.
Okay, that's great. So we have we are almost at the end of this webinar. And as a closing remark, I would like to, what we learned today is that, of course, including patient voice will need that extra, little extra work, but it's not impossible. The patient advocacy groups, patient organizations are ready for, are willing to collaborate. You did it, and it was not impossible. So more organizations and more providers should try to include the patient voice. Yeah. Thank you very much. It was great seeing you.
Thank you, Monica. Thank you, Gabor.
See you in the next webinar. Bye.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
That was GCMEP members Monica Ghedinelli, Celeste Kalanka, and Gabor Purman discussing incorporating the patient voice in CME. The Good CME Practice Group, or GCMEP, is a membership organization for CME providers based in Europe. More information can be found on the group's website, gcmep.org. Thank you for listening, and join us for more episodes as we explore all things CME CPD.